Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy, Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I did not really get into talking about our thoughts, looking back on the season a little bit and talking about what was going forward. So we thought, before jumping into Winnipeg with a lot of broadcasters and things heading on vacation right now, that we would spend a little time kind of talking about things that we see going on in the American Association, maybe even around baseball in general. So Kevin and I are just going to talk about some questions that the two of us have come up with today here to talk about, and then roll with that from there. So, Kevin, good to have you back on here tonight, and I'm going to start by asking you, what's some, you know, we talk about, like, surprises, but what's something new you learned in the American Association this year? In that question, something that kind of was new to you.
First of all, when do we get our vacation?
When you go to Las Vegas, I think in January is usually when that happens.
Everyone's going on their vacation now, and you and I are just toiling away. Just another week I work at the old This Week in the Association headquarters, which the abbreviation for that we've always used for This Week in the Association, TWITA. I found out that has a different meaning.
Oh, and what would that be?
Well, you know how LOL means laugh out loud.
Yeah.
GFO means get the F out. Apparently, TWITA means that's what I'm talking about.
All right. It fits.
Yeah, I can think of worse double meanings for it. So, yeah, I thought I was kind of honored by that. So you had a question.
New you learned yes, that's something new you learned. What's something new you learned this season?
I've learned, and I'm sure I'll get hammered for this because, I mean, it wouldn't be a full week without it. I've learned that it seems like the American Association have gotten heavily into sponsorships. And it seems like the direction we're going in is the health of this league is going to be dictated by having strong corporate sponsorships to help all the teams remain healthy, as opposed to getting butts in the seats. Just my opinion, so come at me as much as you want. I really don't care. But it just seems like week after week, or maybe not week after week, but it seems like we keep hearing more sponsorships, and it seems like that seems to be the way things are going to go with this league, is that teams are going to remain solvent from money off of league sponsorships. I could be wrong, probably am, and I know I'll hear about it if I am, but whatever.
No, I think you're making a very strong observation out there, and first of all, there's nothing wrong with corporate sponsorship. I think that's great, and it really not only extends the brand, but as you said, talks about providing a higher degree of revenue and solidification of the financial situation for all the teams out there. So totally in favor of that in every way. Kevin, it harkens me back. I'll use harken here to when the Grand Prairie Air Hogs had that deal with China to send their players over here, and they didn't care about fans at all after that. I mean, I went to some games down there where there were like 20, literally 25 people sitting in the stands. And, that's kind of embarrassing, you know, to look at that. So I hope that doesn't become where teams get away from that. So that'd be my thought on it. All right. That's the answer. How about that? Lay it on me, Kevin.
Okay. If you could buy a team in the American Association, who would it be, and what, if anything, would you change with it?
Wow, that's a good question.
That's why I came up with it, buddy.
It is a good one, too. You know, and it really depends on whether you want one that is in the strongest financial situation, you know, a team like, you know, obviously King County's drawing a huge crowd every night, so you know you're strong in the numbers there. Whether you want a team with, you know, kind of a little cachet to them, like Fargo or Winnipeg, you know, teams that have been around a long time and really have that long-standing reputation, or whether you want a challenge. So I'm going to go with a challenge, Kevin, is what I'm going to say here. And I would say, I think John Roos doing a great job in Sioux City. I would like the Sioux Falls Canaries is a team I would like. And I think that the first thing that I would do is, the one change that I would make is, I would embrace what Sioux Falls is all about. That ballpark, Ben, embrace it. I mean, if this is where you're going to wind up, and you're not going to wind up moving, I love that they put in a scoreboard and they did some stuff with the turf, man. That's just awesome. I'd be harping up that this is the best ballpark to watch, you know, computer baseball in a way. You know, you're going to get big scoring nights every night. It's going to be a fun time for fans. And I'd have all kinds of promotions related around scores and crazy outcomes to games. And I'd really dive into that. That would be my thing that I would do.
I would like to embrace Sioux City and give that, like you said, you know, John Roos has been doing a great job keeping that team solvent for all these years on pretty much his own dime. So, you know, no insult to anything John's done, but, you know, they'll be the first to admit that it's been a pretty bare bone staff down there. But I would like to take that franchise, put a little bit of the St. Paul fun is good into it, and just see, maybe, just maybe, that would be the spark that could capture the attention of the Sioux City fans and the Sioux City community in general. There's never really been a real outlandish headline-catching promotion down there, and I'd just be really interested to see what could be done if you put the, if you decide just to go in that direction and, you know, still be respectful of the great product that Steve Montgomery and Bobby Pulse put out there, but create a little bit of excitement in the stands and in the parking lot and make their games events as opposed to pure baseball. We've seen what they can do down there with on fireworks nights, and that seems to be an established tradition down there. They'll pack the place for fireworks. I just like to see excitement at that ballpark for 50 games a week as opposed to just on certain nights.
I think there should be green onion brat night once a week. They should definitely have that.
Well, you know, I'd be a third, you know. People tailgating in the lot and Mongo and Bobby doing the round.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Kevin, we had the second round of Hall of Fame inductees this year with Reggie Abercrombie leading that group, and well-deserved. Guys like Mike Vec was a well-deserved addition as well. So who do you think should be the next group of Hall of Fame inductees?
You know, people I can think of off the top of my head right now, I think a guy that played many years in this league, Josh Mazzola, would be somebody to give some consideration to. I think the numbers that Bo Torbert put up in Sioux Falls certainly garner consideration also. And although it was only 3 years with a gap between first, the second, and third year, I'm going to say, for what he did for this league, he had great numbers on the mound. But what he did as far as fan interaction, and I can only imagine what he'd do nowadays if he was in the social media age, I would definitely I would throw Mark Hamburger in it. I know he didn't pitch a ton of years in the league, but he did very well in the league, and just what he brought to the league in the years that he was here, I would give him consideration for the Hall of Fame also.
Yeah, those are definitely guys. Josh Mazzola in particular had a number of fantastic years in this league. I believe played for both Winnipeg and Fargo. Was that right? Or Winnipeg and
Sioux Falls? I believe he ended up in, he ended in Fargo.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So a guy definitely built a reputation. For me personally, a guy that I just had a huge amount of respect because I got to watch him manage all the time would be Kevin Hooper. Had a great season in his first year as a player in the league, and then was always on the idea that he was going to wind up managing, and had the team in the playoffs every year that he managed. So 7 seasons, that's a pretty impressive job there before joining the Padres organization. Is one guy I think deserves to be in there. Players out there, man, there's been so many good ones that we've got to see, and two that I know we're not going to get to talk about for a while until they're closing in on retirement are going to be Nate Sampson and Kevin McGovern. So I won't throw those both those guys out here because they're shoo-ins. But, man, talking about some players out there, boy. I think who was the Travis Denker, who played in Laredo for 4 or 5 seasons, was a guy that had some huge offensive numbers for the Lemurs. And, and another guy, too, that I think moved on to another league now and kind of doing his own thing. But Pete Incaviglia was not only a winning manager in this league for a bunch of years, but was quite the colorful character to watch in the dugout many nights. So, I had a Hall of Fame look at before the season began. But those are a few other guys that I think deserve some consideration out there as well. So that's my
It would be tip. Interesting. It'd be interesting with Incaviglia because he is still actively managing in the Frontier League, I believe, with the Tri-City Valley Cats or whatever the heck they're called.
Yes, you were correct. So, just interesting.
Rob, you were a Wichita guy before you made the move up north. I'll throw another name at you, David Espinoza.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great choice right there, Kevin, because he's first or second in a bunch of offensive categories for the league, like total hits and extra base hits. And I think he's even up there in stolen bases, if I'm not wrong about that. But he played a bunch of games in the league here and for a few different teams, was a winner everywhere he went. So, yeah, definitely. I absolutely agree with that. Kevin's call.
Okay, who will be the next manager of the Cleveland Railroaders?
Wow, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, I believe, too. And I'm interested to see where ownership will go with this here. I believe you're going to probably see Arthur Rhodes could very well return as the pitching coach. I could completely see that. This is going to be a guy who comes in understanding that part of his staff is going to be filled. But, do they go for the splashy name or do they go with a person who's maybe trying to develop himself? Logan was a guy who was trying to develop himself and did a fine job there, not to the satisfaction of owners, I guess. So I will think it will be a splashy name is what I'm going to go with, Kevin. And, man, that's a good question out there. Who's a guy that is available? I think you're not going to get any of the current managers lured away from their teams. So you're looking at a guy that is available because he's not working for somebody else. And I think you're there's not somebody whose name like that really leaps out at me. I mean, so God, that's a really good question. Kevin with a stumper right off the bat, man. The one guy I'm going to say, I if they were really looking for a guy that I think deserves a serious shot, either one of those coaches for Milwaukee, I think would be fantastic. Both those guys are amazing and do such a great job at not only you know, kind of guiding and providing great insight for Anthony about what the team needs to do and getting guys prepped and stuff like that. But Anthony gives them all the praise in the world for the fantastic job that they do. And G.J. Boston and Jose Rodriguez, both of them are fantastic. And if a team wanted to do something and really have a guy that I think has good, both those guys have good connections in independent baseball, have a track record of success because of how Milwaukee has played and would get a lot of respect, I'd like to see either one of those two guys get the job. I think that'd be great picks. What about you, Kevin?
I am going to go with somebody that, well, first of all, I do want to say there were one of my sources in the baseball asked me if I had heard any rumblings about the guy we were talking about earlier, Pete Incaviglia, getting the Cleburne job. And, you know, he does check the boxes as somebody that's got name value of being a former Texas Ranger. So I don't know if there's anything to those thoughts out there, or if it's just somebody throwing out a name. But I'm going to throw out a name. And, you know, it's going to be a bit of a long shot, but it was just something I was reading today. Mike Pinto, who previously managed in the league with the Sioux Falls Canaries and was, it was his first managerial job. He was a little overwhelmed. The results were not what he wanted. But Mike went on to manage the Southern Illinois Miners in the Frontier League. And Mike established a winning tradition with that team. And just the way he managed the team had to buy into a team concept. He would recruit players much like a college football coach would recruit a high school player. He'd bring these guys in. He'd show, you know, they'd come in, they'd see their face on their scoreboard in their ballpark. And, you know, I heard a podcast with Mike, and I thought this was very interesting. He said when he would talk to a player about playing for him, he'd ask the player if he had any questions. And if the player answered with how much money would I make, he never signed the guy. But you can look it up. The Southern Illinois Miners had a great record, a consistent winner. I mean, Mike really built something special there. A lot of guys moved on from that team to eventually make it up to higher minor league baseball and even to the majors. And then the team, the ownership just didn't want to be in professional baseball anymore. And Mike has been out of the loop for the last couple of years, but he posted on LinkedIn that he wants to get back in again. I would just love to see Cleburne hand him the key and say, Mike, do down here what you did with the Southern Illinois Miners, and let's see what we can do here. So I'm going to go with Mike Pinto.
I like it. Kevin, let's do question number three for you. Earlier on the season, Jim Bennett was replaced in Lake Country. I think both of us were surprised by that. Ken Huckabee did a fantastic job for the club. I think this said a lot about ownership and what their expectations are for winning in this league. So give me your thoughts a year, two, three from now. How do you see ownership impacting the Lake Country Dockhounds, and what will they be in terms of a competitor two seasons from now?
I think we really need to see defined roles within the organization. What are you going to do? Is the general manager going to be somebody that's going to bring in the players and then whoever's installed as your manager manages them? Does the manager go out and get the players and ownership kind of backs off and lets him do his thing? I think there has to be a clear definition of what the organizational tree is going to be there, or else it's going to be a team like we saw this year that shows flashes but just never really gels. Because I think in the partner league baseball, the ownership groups need to worry about the financial big picture things, getting people in the ballpark, getting group areas filled, coming up with promotions to bring fans out. I think you need to leave the personnel to the manager, because it's not going to be someone in the front office that's going to see that player in the locker room every day. It's going to be the manager. The GM's not going to decide how much his player plays. It's going to be the manager. So the best move this organization can make is to have a manager, whether it be Ken Huckabee or somebody else, and just say, okay, you're running the team. We'll try to fill the ballpark to watch your team. If they can't do that, I just see this where it's just going to be a carousel of players and managers coming and going.
Interesting. You know, Kevin, I think we've seen across sports is that when you have bad ownership, and please don't take this, I'm saying bad ownership here in Lake Country in any way, because that's not what I'm implying here. But when you have bad owners, you can have almost the inevitable result is terrible teams. So as I kind of look at this, I'm thinking to myself, okay, where does this ownership group kind of fit in? I like a group that wants to go out there and win right away, is understanding that, you know, you're not locked into trying to build something as a partner league team, because you don't have to build minor league teams and try to draft and all this other kind of stuff. You can start winning right off the bat. So it looks like the owner has a very big role in who is brought into the team. And I guess it's just going to depend on how well that blends with Ken Huckabee. I think Ken Huckabee is going to be here a long time. So based on him and what it looks like that relationship's looking like and what the culture that Ken was building there, I think this is a team that's going to wind up, they're not going to win a championship within a couple of years, but I think that they make the playoffs at least one of the next 2 years, maybe both. It's just that East is going to be so tough from now on forever. So I'm going to say, One playoff trip for sure in the next 2 years. That's kind of a weak answer, but I'm going with it anyway, Kevin. So there we go. Kevin, number three.
Who do you feel is the number one rivalry in American Association baseball at this point?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. Fargo-Winnipeg has lost some of its luster, I think. And I think, I mean, you could look at it, there's some great rivalries out there. Chicago and Milwaukee are a great rivalry. Clearly, Lake Country came in jabbing at Milwaukee right off the bat, and that has had its impact. But the conclusion of the two previous seasons to this one, I think, have built quite the rivalry between Lincoln and Sioux City, because Lincoln got knocked out a couple of years ago, losing on the last couple of games of the season, and then came back two seasons ago and knocked out Sioux City on the last few days of the season there by sweeping those final three games in Sioux City. And that looked like those were very tense series a lot this year, especially with Nate Sampson across in the other dugout for the Salt Dogs. So I think because of what's gone on between these two teams, you can give Kansas City and Sioux City, that's a great rivalry as well, because these teams absolutely hate each other. But I'm liking that Salt Dogs Explorers rivalry. And Kevin says,
I would say, just judging by the last 2 years, and it's so strange because and think of it, it's not a geographical rivalry, it's not a long-lasting rivalry, but just because of what's gone on the last two seasons, I'd say Cleburne and Kane County. You had the whole thing, they met in the playoffs last year, Kane County got knocked out by Cleburne, and now this year with the series they had in Kane County with Gally Cripps in a walk-off home run and then gesturing over to the Cleburne dugout. It's you can tell these two teams just do not like each other. And the way it's set up in that division, when they do match up, it's six nights in a row. I mean, could you imagine in the heat of their rivalry, imagine a six-game series with the Yankees and Red Sox, how intense that would have been. Well, we have that in this league with Cleburne and Kane County, and I think it's going to be one to keep an eye out for in the next few years.
That's a very good point. Kevin, let's go with this one. Joe Calfa-Pietra has probably established himself overall as the best manager in the American Association right now. Three championships in the last six seasons, and one of those seasons the team didn't play. So just really a guy that has got all the number of guys sent back to Major League Baseball and or affiliate baseball at least, and just become the class act of the league in a lot of ways. So tell me, how many victories does Joe Calfa-Pietra earn before he decides to hang it up? I think he's at about 1,290, pretty close to that, 1,250, something like that. It's a pretty high number. Maybe it's not that high, about 1,200 maybe. I think it is. Where does he wind up at?
That's so tough to tell because, you know, I don't know Joe very well at all. I maybe talk to him. If we haven't had him on the show, I don't even think we've had him on the show before. But there's so many factors that go into that. First of all, obviously the team performance. And then obviously the health of the person. And then, you know, Joe lives out in Pennsylvania. How many more summers does he want to be spending 4 or 5 months in Kansas City away from his family? So I wish I had an answer for you, but then there's the personal health with Joe. You know, I wish him well, but sometimes guys our age, the things start popping up that we don't expect, and it does take a toll on you. So I'd love to tell you that he's going to be around for 1,000 more victories, but Father Time is cruel, and I don't want to sound like a downer, but I think if Joe can stay healthy and the fire's still there and he can be all right with being away from his family so many months a year, I think, why not 1,000 more victories? Maybe not 1,000 more. That'd be a lot of years. I can see him get up to like
more.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he could do that. You got to think, even a good year, you're only racking up 60 wins. And that's really tough. I don't know what his grand total is right now. But boy, that'd be tough to get to 2,000. I can see him getting around 1,700, 1,800, and then deciding to call it a career.
So 1,217 right now is where Joe is sitting at. And I think he's probably maybe slightly older than me. 56, I'm at probably 58, 59 at most. So probably, let's see, could I get 10 more years out of Joe, I think. It's 11 more years out of Joe. 55 victories. Pretty close to 1,800. I think 1,700 is a good call there, Kevin. I think that's probably a fair number to go with. So, Kevin, number four.
Well, I was going to say, because I was watching The Office earlier today as I was doing these questions, and originally question number four was going to be, should Pam still be banned from Chili's? But we'll scrap that one. If you had a baseball fan and you had to sell him on the quality of baseball or just sell him on the league, the American Association in general, how would you sell this person on becoming a fan of the American Association Baseball?
Oh, that's a very good question. Well, I think it starts with we're able to see a lot of incredible players who have reached the top part of the game. And we saw Chris Herrmann have a monster year last year and was a solid catcher in Major League Baseball for 7 or 8 seasons. And, you know, he's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. We have a lot of guys who are AAA and AA guys. Interestingly enough, we saw a lot of guys come out of the Twins organization this year and join the American Association. And that Twins organization got on quite a run this year. They went to the playoffs, I believe, right now. So I think that the level of talent you're seeing, that there's not a significant drop-off, if any drop-off, from minor league baseball, the upper levels of minor league baseball in any way. And I think the fact of you get to see competitive games every night where teams are out there fighting to win games and not somebody's on a pitch count of 65 or whatever and their night is over makes this a more enjoyable game to watch. And while I wasn't a huge fan of this, Kevin, at first, I will tip my cap because I believe it was Tom Vaith who told us this, that we would like this, that pitch clock did make games more enjoyable this year. It was just some of those 17-10 Sioux City victories, Sioux Falls victories, you know, we saw in previous years were 3 hours and 45 minutes or 4 hours and 10 minutes. To see those games end in 3:05 or 2:59 or something was amazing to me. You get all of the fun of baseball, I think, at a price that's affordable, and you're not seeing any drop-off. That'd be my pitch.
I would tell them just the stories, because you're not just seeing guys that played Major League Baseball or lifetime Major Leaguers playing in this league, but you're seeing the guy that's getting his first chance out of college or a guy that may have been highly touted coming out of school, got drafted high, flamed out, but again, it's getting a second chance. You know, it's the thing that steered me to keep following the American Association, even when I got the AAA baseball in my backyard. You don't get those stories in AAA like you do in the American Association with, what's the saying? Everybody loves an underdog, right? Well, in AAA, it's all guys. They're playing AAA because they're expected to make the majors, not because they're some kind of a fairy tale. So I would sell them on the fact that it's you're seeing guys fresh out of college trying to do really well against guys that are former major leaguers, and you know, and it's a challenge out there. And like I said, the stories of guys that do succeed in this league and move on, I think, are just really fun to follow.
You know, along that lines, Kevin, the league had a great video out on Twitter this week. I believe this was at the championship series, where after Kansas City won, Chris Herrmann gave some fan, some little kid, probably 12, 11 years old, his shoes. And the kid just wrapped his arms around Chris Herrmann. It was a really touching thing. I mean, if you haven't seen that, fans out there, go watch the American Association Twitter account, because that is just the coolest thing to watch. And I believe our buddy Matt Yazel had a thing on there that said Chris Herrmann just changed this kid's life forever. And he probably did. You know, I mean, that was quite a touching moment. And former major leaguer looking, you know, because he gets to enjoy playing American Association baseball, giving back in a way like that. I thought that was pretty cool. How about this one, Kevin? What's a rule you would like to see changed or added in the American Association?
I would like to see a little bit of leniency on the pitch clock. I agree it's been a good thing, but I just think to just trying to get this rule over so much, I believe the umpires have been a little too focused on enforcing the pitch clock. And I think at times it does take away from the game, because at a key point in the game, a guy is getting a strike called on him just because he wasn't quite ready to face the pitcher yet, or a pitcher was just about ready to throw and the clock barely hits zero and it gets called on him. So I just don't like having that be something that decides games. Have it, but have it as a guy, not as an absolute ironclad have to enforce this, because, you know, I thought it was going to get better as the season went on, that there wouldn't be as many violations, but it seemed even into the playoffs there were batters getting strikes called on them, or pitchers getting balls called on them because of the pitch clock.
Interesting. I like that. I'm not really sure how to answer this myself personally, because they've kind of gotten a little more lenient on roster rules in terms of how many vets you can have, and I think that's a good thing. I like still having the younger guys in there too, because that's a good thing. It gives the league an interesting combination that's pretty cool about it, and the way a manager has to build their rosters. But one thing you were talking about a few weeks ago, related to, Kansas City added two major league arms in the last couple of weeks of the season. And I think about sometimes about how these late season additions greatly impact the playoffs. And I get it, you know, a team could trade for a guy in Major League Baseball in the last month of the season, or call up some guy from AAA and it becomes a huge phenom for them or whatever, helps lead things. But I would like to see a more solidified kind of roster, maybe a little earlier than 10 days or 7 days before the season ends or something like that, so that who you had that kind of led you there plays a bigger role in you continuing to get to the playoffs and winning a championship. So maybe that means that August 15th or August 10th or something like that, you can make that it's a trade deadline, or that you can't add players after that point or something. I don't know. I would like to see where it was a little bit more of what got you through the first 85 games of the season and what led you to the championship. That'd be my thought.
That's a good thought. I can remember all the way back to 1996 with St. Paul, where they were fair to middling in the second half. And trade deadline, they picked up John Burgos, who had been a long-time pitcher. Name probably doesn't ring a bell with most people, but he had a lot of success on many levels of baseball. And someone that, you know, Cubs fans can remember, Hector Villanueva. They picked both of those guys up at the trade deadline. And they both played big factors on giving the Saints a championship. You know, what I'd like to see with the rosters is a revamping of the rookie LS1 veteran system. And I believe they have kind of gotten away from having, you can only, doesn't matter how many LS5 guys, but I'd like to see a different system, because right now a veteran could be a guy that's played 10 years and never gotten above AA. Meanwhile, a guy that skyrocketed quickly to the majors, but then is back down playing independent baseball, is an LS guy. Well, I'd rather have that LS guy than the 10-year-old vet that never got above AA. So I don't know exactly what you'd do to go about it, but I would like to see a revamping of that, because that was a lot of what Kansas City had, were guys that had AAA major league experience, but because of the years, they were still considered LS guys. So they were able to have their full allotment of veterans, but then had guys that are considered LS guys that had considerable experience.
You know, along those same lines, Kevin, you could also talk about maybe a true rookie should be a true rookie. You know, I'm a guy playing in his first season of professional baseball. Giving a guy 2 years of experience and still calling them a rookie, you know, I think Luke Roskam was in his third season of professional baseball this year and was still considered a rookie. And, I'm going to tell you, I voted for him for second for Rookie of the Year. But that was just because of pure numbers. But, things like that, classification of how to determine rookie and things like that, I think it would make it more interesting. I think they do that so that a team feels like the six rookies or five rookies they have are much more valuable to them because maybe they're a second-year pro or a two-and-a-half-year pro or something. But I like you were saying, I like those kids that just came out of college and impacted the game. And I think that would be better if they just said, true rookie. That's what it should be. So. Question five for Kevin.
Well, we're going to fluff it away, guys. We've had a lot of good American Association talk, but I'm just going to talk in general because I saw this question pop up on Facebook and it pertained to rock concerts, but I'm going to throw this out and relate it to baseball. If you had a chance to, if there was a game you wanted to see real, real bad, let's say a seventh game of the World Series or a championship game that's a little ways away, but you'd be the only one that'd be up for going to it. Would you go to a game alone?
Oh, absolutely. I think the funny thing is that's kind of a tough question for you and I because we travel to stuff alone all the time, to go watch games. I understand we're kind of covering it for what we do here, but those kind of things don't bother me. For the longest time, and a lot of times in the summer, I drove, 10, 11 hours to get to games where I sat by myself a lot of the time, it wouldn't be a problem for me at all.
Well, no, when I read that question on Facebook, I'd say 95% of the answers were yes. People are saying, well, if it's a huge event, as soon as you get there and sit down, you're going to have all these friends around you because you're all there for the same thing. And yeah. I guess, you and I get that too because most places we go to, we know we can go there alone, but we know once we're there, we're not going to be alone. There's going to be people right. We know, and it's not that big of a deal, but I know, if you want to peel some layers back, I'll go back to when I was 20 years old. Just got my driver's license. I was working overnights, didn't really have many friends. And friends I had, I'd always joke that it was like trying to get them to fill out a 15-page application to go do something. And I just said, well, screw this. If I want to go to a ball game, nobody else wants to go, I'll go.
Yep.
And I'm telling you, folks, if you haven't done it before, go to a ballpark. And this is why I like when teams have live radio and not this MixLR stuff. Go to a ball game, put the headphones on, and watch the ball game, and you're going to be locked into that game. The guys that are guys or gals nowadays that are broadcasting that game, you're going to feel like you're locked into that game with them. That's why when I went to Lincoln in August, I wanted to do a game in the press box like you and I would do. But then I wanted to get the true feel of a ball game in Lincoln. So I sat out in the crowd and I pulled in the broadcast with Michael Dixon, Connor Clark, and I just felt locked in, and it felt like a really true baseball experience like I remembered. And to me, in the end, it doesn't matter if I was with anybody or not, or if I had anyone to talk to. Heck, I did a baseball trip to Des Moines a few weeks ago where I was thinking about this today. I don't think I had a meaningful conversation with anybody the entire weekend. And I was all right with it. So I'm telling you, folks, if you're a big fan of your team and you're not going to stuff because you couldn't find someone to go. Just go. And trust me, if you go to somewhere enough, people will notice you're there and they'll take you in.
I'm with you on that. Well, Kevin, I know we made this. We were going to come up with five questions apiece here, but I did want to throw one other one at you here tonight. And, you know, we've been through a long season here. It went by really quickly, I'm going to tell you honestly. And I kind of, I was thinking when I was writing Player of the it really does. And I was thinking when I was writing Player of the Week for the 16th week of the season about 3.5 or 4 weeks ago, I was like, I can't believe I'm on week 16 already. This is absolutely insane. The season, you know, we're kind of waiting and it seems like it drags on, but once it gets going, it really gets going fast. I'm not going to lie about that. So, and I know there are a bunch of people we get to interact with and a bunch of people have an impact on us, but give me five people from this last season that you just want to give a personal thank you to for whatever reason.
I'd have to say, and it's probably because of the people I either have continued friendships with or have galvanized friendships with. I would have to say, obviously, our good friend Dan Vaughn. You know, I've stayed at Casa Vaughn a few times during the summer, so saved me a ton of money. The friendship I've developed with Tanner Hoops, and we know what Tanner has done with us during the season or during the playoffs. I just had lunch with him last week at the Gideons up in St. Paul. So, you know, it was fun to do a lot of stuff with him this summer. Michael Dixon, I feel like we finally had a chance to talk and get to know each other better. And I just feel more of a bond with Michael than I had in the past. And, you know, and it was just a blast to go down the Lincoln finally and see how things are done down there. Connor Klingon was just absolutely fabulous to me in my trip out to King County this year. And of course, I mean, you're the guy that makes it all happen. You know, if it wasn't for you, I'd be just a blogger in Faribault that goes to games on occasion, and about 90% of the people that know me now would not know me at all.
Well, that's awfully gracious of you to say that. So thank you. But for my five, I'm going to go kind of a different angle on this. So first of all, Kevin McGovern and Nate Sampson, I just want to say thank you for reminded that even guys in their 30s can still rock it. And I'm glad to see, I love to see people like that, you know, defying father time, so to speak, and really making it enjoyable to watch these guys continue who started in the American Association for a long time and continue to do so. And you know, Kevin led the league in ERA. I think a lot of people didn't realize that this season and kind of completely flew under the radar somehow or another, but I think turned 33 or 32 this year, I believe, and that's pretty amazing. So I want to thank those two guys for that. I want to give a thank you to Mike Meyer. It was fantastic to see Sioux Falls, and for fans out there, know I love Mike. He's a phenomenal guy. I consider him to be somebody that is my friend, and I'm so honored to have to be a part of that organization in terms of talking with him all of these years, and to see him go with an entirely new approach this year to wind up turning that team around and get them to the playoffs was fantastic. And Sioux Falls fans deserve to have a great manager like that, and I hope they continue to embrace him, and ownership is smart and keeps him around for a really long time. I want to thank Chicago Dogs for putting me in my place this season, reminding me that my infallibility of doing fairly well in my predictions of how the season's finish would end for the regular season was greatly lacking this year. I mean, really lacking, but no more than with the Chicago Dogs, who I had in last and wound up finishing in first in their division and almost won the championship. So Congratulations to them out there. And again, thank you for putting me in my place and making me a little more humble, Kevin. I think it's always a good thing out there. I want to thank also, obviously, the broadcasters out there, but as you mentioned, Dan and Brad in particular, really, if you really get down to it, Kevin, who always have, you know, we could call them up 5 minutes before we were about to do the show and say, hey, could you pop in here for 30 minutes, and they'd be all over it. And I haven't checked out this this Zebra Sports thing they do down there in Texas, but I'm going to try to get in on some of that action out there because I bet it's kind of fun to hear them call a football game. Have you got to hear that yet?
Oh, a little bit. And boy, this Grandview Zebra team just seems to be curb stomping everybody.
Okay, well, that should be fun. I'm going to have to go and check that out there. So I've got to enjoy their baseball calls, so I really want to see what football sounds like, especially the two of them together. I mean, that'd be a pretty fun thing to listen to. So I'm in for that. And while we may give a little bit of crap to them as the season's going along, I do want to thank Josh Schaub and Josh Buchholz because they really have made this a lot of fun to go out and watch every night. American Association Baseball is about as good as it gets. And it's getting better, Kevin. I think it's very likely we're going to see four teams in this league within the next year or two. And it'll be interesting to see because I'm trying to figure out where there could be beyond that for markets where they could expand to unless they're going to go way out more west or way out more east and try to squeeze it in. But I guess Murfreesboro tells us that they're willing to expand out some east there. But these guys have done a great job. You know, we may get on them sometimes about things we see and go, we don't really understand that. But the truth of the matter is we couldn't have two better guys running the American Association. And we absolutely are very blessed by the job that they do. So thank you to all those guys out there for the job they do. And, of course, thanks to Kevin Lucco, who always makes my summer is a lot more enjoyable, and I know my winters now because we're almost in hockey, Kevin, and that's always fun too.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and you know, and to the Joshes too. I think if we were coming on every week and just like pumping rah rah American Association rah rah, I don't think our show would have the teeth on it that it does. But I think it is an avenue where we do get, when there are issues, we get them out there and we get a dialogue going as opposed to just us coming out every week and just, you know, pretending that everything's going absolutely perfect and there's no other things going on. So I just believe that sometimes it puts you and I in the role as bad guys, but, you know, it's only because we care.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Kevin. And as your question asked me earlier about how would I pitch American Association Baseball to somebody who maybe had never watched a game before, I think it starts with the fact that you have two guys running the show who really love this league. I mean, Josh Buchholz has been involved in this for like, what, almost 30 years are we approaching now for him? 25? At least 25. Would that be right?
Well, he started off as a clubhouse manager in 1996. So,
okay, 96. So what are we talking about? Is that what 27 years? And that's a guy who loves his team, loves the league, and so you know, Josh Schaub has only been around for about 5 or 6 years, but boy, he's left a huge footprint already. So. Like two guys who really love the league. When you have that and you have managers that love the league and love their teams and owners that are really excited about what's going on and there's some amazing owners in this league. Domes up there in Fargo are fantastic. Anytime I've talked to them, I really loved it. I think Mike Zimmerman, there's no more passionate guy in sports for his team, despite the whole Savannah banana thing. We'll put that aside, taco and tequila thing. A guy who just absolutely loves his team and loves Milwaukee and is doing great things out there with that whole Rock Ventures. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun to go see what's going on right now. And I'm excited to see, Kevin. Do you think we're going to have How many teams are we going to have here eventually, Kevin? What becomes the cap in American Association Baseball?
I don't think there is per se a cap as long as the, you know, if you get to 14 teams, as long as 14 teams are doing well, then you try 16, and then you work from there. So I don't believe there is ever per se a cap, but it's just a matter of what the overall health of the league is. You know, I've seen it in other sports or other leagues where they just, expansion for expansion's sake just does not work out right in the long run, because I think your league looks a little less legitimate when you have a franchise that's been in like three or four different locations. I've seen it particularly in junior hockey, and it just, to me, it cheapens the look of the entire league. So I think these guys will be smart about expansion, and, you know, if it comes to the point where there's 20 teams, well, great. Then they've done a hell of a job keeping 20 teams running good operations.
I just hope it's always able to stay in this Midwest region. I think that's one of the things that makes this league so much fun, is that it has a very unique feel to it, because with the exception of Single A having, you know, a little bit of teams there in Illinois, Wisconsin, and Iowa, you don't have a lot of minor league teams. I mean, there's no minor league. One minor league team in Nebraska, two minor league teams in Iowa with Cedar Rapids and Des Moines. None in Kansas. One in Missouri, or is it two in Missouri? Is it Springfield and... Columbus have one, Columbia, maybe. But it's just not a lot. And I think that this league really has a great niche out there to add on. I'd love to see them challenge out there and get a team back in Oklahoma City and have, you know, this big enough city that could easily have a double A team and an independent team there as well, a partner league team there as well. And so I know we're going to probably get four in Texas here at some point, maybe even more. But I think I would not be surprised in 10 years if we were looking at twice the number of teams we have right now. If the financial part of the country gets better, Kevin, then I would not be surprised by that at all.
Yeah, we just need to fix that little hole they got right now in Minnesota with only a single AAA team. Yeah. Because Kevin needs an office again.
Yes, he does. And like Sean Aronson got to set the press box when they built CHS Field, they should be coming to Kevin Luko and say, what do you need your press box to look like, Kevin, when you're up here? So,
you know, and that's the thing I would say to any American Association team or prospective American Association team that's going to build a ballpark. I get it that you need areas for sound, for video, for replay, for people doing the pitch clock, but if you can, try to build a dedicated area for the press. Because right now, the ballparks that used to have all kinds of space for it, they just don't anymore. That's not their fault. That's just technology bypassing the ballpark. But, you know, if I'm a journalist and I want to do a feature on your ball team, and I come out to do a story, and I stick around for the game, and there's really nowhere for me to set up with my laptop to do the story, I'm going to be a little less than enthusiastic about coming back out to your ballpark. And, you know, that's the thing St. Paul did right. Sean obviously had a big hand in that, was having a dedicated area for the print press.
Absolutely. Well, that wraps up our show for tonight. Kevin and I will continue back next week. We'll likely continue on with Winnipeg and look back on the 2023 season. But, you know, there was a big championship series that went on down there in Mexico last week, and we'll try to bring in a guest also to talk about that. So that may wind up being for next week instead. We could do Max Murphy and get a twofer out of that, I think, if that wind up working out, to get that in place. But, for sure, Kevin and I will be back. I also want to point out that Kevin and I will be heading on to hockey too. So come out and join Systematically Wild as Kevin and I will be discussing that. But man, Kevin, I'm sorry, I forgot shout outs for this week. We got to do that first.
My shout out is going to be to all the folks out there that follow us on This Week in the Association, particularly on the Facebook page, for doing nothing this week to piss me off so I didn't have to go on any rants. So thank you, folks, for a peaceful week. It was deeply appreciated after two stressful weeks before that that produced probably two of my better rants of all time. So thanks, guys and gals.
My shout out is to the Miami Hurricane coaching staff for football. It's going to go down as the absolute stupidest play choice of play calling for the end of a game of all time. And I've never been a Miami Hurricane fan, I will openly say, so I was enjoying the stupidity of that. But that is going to go down as the most boneheaded coaching move of all time, I think. So, and will be replayed for years to come. So that's my shout outs. All right. So that ended the show. So once again, for Kevin Lucco, I'm Rob Panier. We will see you next week on This Week in the Association.